I've been in other schools where children have died by suicide. And let me tell you, those kids didn't think that they were going to be missed, and they were terribly missed. Everybody felt so bad that they made that choice. And so just like your t-shirt, Janet, it's the message is you are enough. And there you have these connections that you may not even know exist. And it's interesting, too, in our little school district, again, 650 kids, but they're all in the same building. So When those big kids walk through the halls and the little kids see them, I say, they're watching you and they know you and they think about who you might be and what you might be doing. And remember that if you make a decision to hurt yourself, every one of those little kids is going to hear about it and wonder. So you have a real important responsibility here, too. So let's get you through this.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is John Humphreys. John is the director of New Lisbon School District, and that's in New Lisbon, Wisconsin. He has also been a speaker at many conferences and has done some work nationally. So, John, welcome to the show. I'm super excited to have you here.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So I know you have an amazing resume. Tell us a little bit about the things that you have done, and then tell us a little bit about New Lisbon.
Sure. Well, I actually have a background in the hard sciences. I was trained as a microbiologist and was working in a research lab at UW-Madison and started volunteering as a science and math tutor at one of the high schools in Madison. Just fell in love with working with kids who were struggling to learn and went back, got a master's degree in education, became a school psychologist. I had the great honor of working at our Department of Public Instruction here in Wisconsin from 2004 to 2011. Did a lot of work on student mental health and youth suicide prevention. We'll talk a little more about that. Was also involved in the early stages of RTI implementation and the use of evidence-based interventions to improve student outcomes. Went on to be a superintendent, a special education director in multiple school districts. Was actually a candidate for state superintendent here in Wisconsin in 2017, and really highlighted the issues around the science of reading and the need for evidence-based literacy instruction. So that brought that to the political fore. And it's been a really dynamic, fun career. I've been honored to do some fun work and things that have made, a good difference.
Yeah, you are making a difference in education, and we are so honored that you have taken the time to talk to us today. So, and I know you had said, so tell us a little bit about, I want to make sure we plug the school that you are currently working at as well.
Absolutely. New Lisbon is a neat district. It's about 650 kids K-12 in a single campus. We've been blessed with a school board and a superintendent and administrative team that is very focused on improving student outcomes. We have a robust professional learning community model going on in K-12, but in particular, we've been working on the science of reading and the science of math at the elementary level. Our academic achievement levels have been among the lowest in the state in prior years, and we've already started to see in the last year and a half good gains for all of our students, including students with disabilities. And so we're excited to watch the progress. I'm excited for New Lisbon, and it's been a really fun assignment for me.
Awesome. Awesome. One aside, and we didn't talk about this, but I want to mention it and get your take on it. You know, you talk about test scores, and one of the things that it's a little bit of a soapbox that I get onto. If you've listened to any of my podcasts, you might hear me say this again. But, you know, you talked about test scores for special education, and yet, you know, our scores, and first of all, I hate that's how they rank schools anyway, because it's one score at one point, wherever that child was, that drives me crazy. But then, you know, they talk about how the United States is failing over other countries. But, you know, in the United States, we put special education kids into that score, but that is not happening. I guarantee you, China is not putting their special education students in that score. So I just feel like we're not on a level playing field. So I'm just curious if you could comment on that, and then we'll go on to our other topic. So I'm just
just Monday night, I was describing to the school board some of the gaps in academic achievement outcomes between students with disabilities and their non-disabled peers. And what we did then some follow-up analysis to look at the gaps in achievement between those two groups. We're seeing a real narrowing of the gap between those two groups, especially in literacy. And it's particularly because this idea that all kids can learn. And in fact, sometimes people say, oh, well, they've got disabilities. We shouldn't expect them to be achieving commensurate with their peers, which is potentially true in some cases. You know, nonverbal autism, kids with intellectual or cognitive disabilities, obviously. But a student who has who's somewhere on the autism spectrum where they're verbal or even very high achieving, students with even Sally Shaywitz is a dyslexia researcher, and she's identified that most kids with dyslexia, in diagnosed clinical dyslexia, can still be performing at or close to grade level and be effective readers. So I hold our folks accountable, myself number one. We've got to do better for all kids. Interestingly, using evidence-based practices benefits all kids. The kids who are high flyers achieve even higher, and kids with IEPs can get up to grade level. So it's a real opportunity for our schools.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for sharing your expertise, because I love that you have so much knowledge, and it's just nice to be able to pick your brain. So, but let's talk about, you guys are doing some amazing things with suicide prevention and have a program there. And I'd love to hear about what you guys are doing.
You bet. So when I was with the Department of Public Instruction, there were a few years where I was the lead staff member on youth suicide prevention. We trained thousands of educators across the state to use evidence-based programming to impact the issue of youth suicide. On average, in those years, prior to that time, Wisconsin was losing about one young person each week. We had about a suicide rate of about 50 to 60 kids in a year, kids under the age of 18 dying from self-inflicted injury. The particularly interesting aspect of that was that obviously everybody wants to solve that problem. So there's a high motivation. It was also really interesting because it's not a complex solution. You teach kids what to look out for in their friends, and you teach teachers what to look out for in kids, and you get those kids who are at risk to some basic problem solving. For kids, in teens in particular, obviously, it's typically a misunderstanding of a crisis. It could be the loss of a partner, girlfriend, boyfriend kind of a situation, a bad grade for kids who are high achieving, not getting into the college that they wanted, getting, not getting the prom date they wanted, whatever it might be. And they lack the perspective of time to be able to process those what they see as life-ending kinds of challenges. So we train the kids what to look out for in their friends. We train the staff what to look out for in kids. And then we get those kids to supportive interventions. It's not even that long term of a supportive intervention. And that youth suicide rate that was 50 to 60 kids per year was reduced by 50% within 3 years. So we've started to apply those same kinds of things here in New Lisbon. We worked with our eighth graders last spring. Some people think the holidays is the real season for suicide attempts and suicide risk. And in fact, what we identified back in the earlier years was that spring is suicide season. We have kids who are facing summers of food insecurity, isolation. We have kids who, that's prom season. We have kids who are not getting the dates they want or not getting the ACT scores they want. And some of these things they see as being kind of life-changing or life-ending. So in the spring, we met with our kids and we taught them about the risk factors and warning signs about youth suicide. I like to use a suicide, quote, equation, which is typically depression or low mood of some sort, an opportunity, so unsupervised time, and oftentimes access to a firearm. Firearms are the leading cause of youth suicide. And we're not about gun control so much as safe storage. We just say that, you know, children, especially children who are at risk, shouldn't have unsupervised access to firearms. So, that's what we shared with our kids, and boy, it was eye-opening for them. And I think you get this group of early teen age kids, and they can take these topics very seriously and know exactly what to do. Sometimes when a student is at risk and they're talking about harming themselves, they'll tell a friend, and oftentimes it's not a secret. But what we say is it's better to lose the friendship than to lose the friend altogether. So just this week, I had, actually it was last week, I had a staff member who had heard about a student who was suicidal. We spoke well, and she had expressed to a friend that she was thinking about harming herself. We spoke with her. The threat had come a few weeks earlier. Spoke with the parent, actually met with the parent this week, and we've got a system where we do outside mental health referrals. So it's that kind of just connecting the dots, getting kids to understand that reporting is really important and staff to know that they can come to us right away. It's not a complex solution, but it can have a real impact.
For sure. Yeah. 50% reduction. That's amazing. That's 25, 30 kids that are alive today because of the work that you're doing. And every single one of them is worth the time that you've spent doing it. So congratulations on that. That's amazing. That's, yeah. Yeah. And so what do you think, what do you think that, or maybe you know, it seems like it's getting worse, you know, like suicide rates and this is not me researching it. This is me saying, you know, I hear about social emotional learning and I hear about how there's so much more anxiety. There's so much more of this. There's so much more of that. And having experienced, my son lost a 18-year-old friend last Christmas, and it was horrible. And it was, my son was devastated. And it's one of those things. I don't know if you've seen those shirts. They say you're enough. And then and there's on the back, it says, hey, person behind me, you're valued and all of that. It's really, and so I got him a shirt and every time I wear that t-shirt out in public, and I have long hair, so I cover it. So I always, if I'm wearing that shirt, I always try to make sure I put my hair up so people can read it because they need, I mean, just even if it gives some, and I've had people say to me, I love your shirt. Absolutely love your shirt, you know. And so I'm just curious about what your knowledge is or what your thoughts are about is it getting worse?
Well, from what I understand, I've not delved into this at the state or national level because I don't work at that level any longer. But yes, I have read reports that there are increasing levels of youth suicide and suicide completions. We use a survey here in Wisconsin called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. It's a national survey that in prior years the federal government had supported in order to get an understanding of the level of risk. And I understand that post-COVID, the suicide rates have been really substantially increasing. Interestingly, this project that I was a part of stopped doing all the statewide training. And within a few years, the rate in Wisconsin had inched back up again. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. And it's not, it's not a complex solution. Right. And we're not talking about kids getting into 16 weeks of psychodynamic psychotherapy and whatever, whatever. We got to get them through this little crisis time and realize it's okay. There's going to be another girlfriend or boyfriend out there. I liked telling the story that when I was in college, my girlfriend from high school, who I was dating up at school, broke up with me. She found another guy, and I moped around for weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And then, you know, I was walking around the campus at UW-Madison where there are 50,000 students and there were 25,000 females out there. And I thought, you know, there's probably one out there who might like me. Mm-hmm. And certainly, sure enough, I did meet somebody, but kids lack that perspective, right? And so, getting them through the crisis time is often the important piece. And not to blame people who were involved in your child's friend's life, right? It oftentimes, mm-hmm. it can be a total surprise for people. And these can be kids who are high achieving.
Oh, yeah. That's what this child was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That, and it's heartbreaking.
It can be devastating.
Yeah. It is devastating. And you just go, you know, and I don't know this, you know, I didn't know him personally, but I knew what my son had told me, and he, it sounded like he didn't let anybody know. And I'm, it's just, you just go, oh yeah. So yeah, he had a scholarship and he was a wrestler and he was going to college and I don't know what happened. Something. And I think, and I have a feeling it was probably something that he just felt was world ending, obviously, which probably wasn't. Yeah. And it just, yeah, that's truly heartbreaking because, you know, and if you can get kids to realize that, right, their friends to realize that they're going to lose their friend if they don't do something.
Yeah. So we could talk about what's called postvention because this happens. It happens altogether too often. In fact, my first month as a superintendent at a small school district here in northern Wisconsin, we lost a recent graduate who was the son of a school board member. And boy, it's the call you never want to get, right? So there are ways that schools and organizations can respond that will actually increase the rate of, or the risk of other kids making attempts. And there have been clusters of suicides when it gets sensationalized in the media. One of the things we advise schools not to do is to have, say, a memorial bench to the child who died by suicide, or a memorial tree, or put their, you know, have the memorial plaque in the hallway or something like that, because kids misunderstand and they think, oh, if I die that way, I'm going to get that grandiose kind of response. And so there are good ways to be very careful about how to respond. Another one that's really important is to share facts. In fact, that is true for any kind of a crisis. I've been in districts where we've had homicides in the district and things to respond with that way, and getting information out very factual, but getting information out in as timely a manner as you can quell rumors and help make sure that, especially in the context of the school staff, they know how to respond. Another thing that some schools try to do is have an assembly. Let's get everybody together and talk about this. And you don't typically want to do that because you want to establish the close relationship between the teachers and the students so that when students have concerns, they can go to see the teachers who they know. So if you have a homeroom kind of a situation, you can create a fact statement about what happened and then share that in that homeroom situation so that students know, you can see me, you can see the school psychologist, you can see the counselor. We've got counseling resources from other schools around. The thing you don't want to do is gather everybody together, have a big emotional outcry, have the parents of the student who died come to speak to the student body. Another thing that schools have done that is not particularly helpful is to have people who've made suicide attempts and survived come in and talk about that. In fact, there's a person who years ago was horribly disfigured in his suicide attempt, and he would go and talk to schools. And it was just, you might think, oh, it's going to scare kids enough, but it has not a good effect. So there's just, we keep it quite contained. And, in fact, in our programming for our students here, we made sure that kids had access to resources and that parents knew we were going to be talking with their kids before the program started.
There's a big difference between being supported by somebody who's walked in your shoes and someone who hasn't. At Lighthouse Therapy, our leadership team is made up of experienced clinicians who've actually worked in schools. We understand the pressure you're under and what real support looks like. That's why our therapy solutions, whether it be virtual, hybrid, or in person, are built with you in mind. No complicated systems or red tape, just streamlined support and seasoned therapists who are ready to make a difference. Learn more at lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together. Mm-hmm. And that is such great advice. I wouldn't have thought, you know, that I probably would have done the same thing. Like, let's get everybody together and talk about it. So everybody, but I like the fact that you're talking about smaller groups, because kids connect with their teachers. They don't necessarily always connect with the administration, and giving them that. Sometimes they do, and I know administrators that do amazing jobs, but there's always that, you always have that one teacher, right? That one person that you're going to go to, and that may or may not be the person that's on that stage. So
absolutely. And I'm 60 years old. I remember in my school, it was our school counselor, Dr. Janish. And he was the guy. I mean, we all knew him. And there were a couple other teachers who we all connected with. And they're out there. I know those folks here. And I try to make sure that each student in our school has somebody that they feel comfortable approaching with concerns.
Yeah. And if they're ratting out their friend, it's got to be somebody that they trust. Because that's what it feels like to them, is that they're ratting out their friend. And they're not. They're probably saving their friend's life, which is the whole reason, you know, that we want them. And I've seen my kids have to go through that with their friends too. I've gotten calls at 1:30 in the morning. I certainly understand where you're coming from, because my own son has experienced a young man in his life who has committed suicide, and it's devastating. And that's not something that we want, is it? Ever. We don't. We never want to put something in front of a child that is going to romanticize something that's horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And they do. And it's you may not think that you're doing it, right? You may not think that that's what you're doing. You're making a difference. But I love the fact that we're having this conversation, and we can have that impact and educate an educator on what to do and what not to do. Because I certainly have learned that as well as we've had this conversation. Yeah. So that's great.
You bet. And one of the things I say when I meet with students who have expressed to a friend or an adult that they're thinking about harming themselves, is that I've lived through this in other schools. I've been in other schools where children have died by suicide. And let me tell you, those kids didn't think that they were going to be missed, and they were terribly missed. Everybody felt so bad that they made that choice. And so just like your t-shirt, Janet, it's the message is you are enough, and there you have these connections that you may not even know exist. And it's interesting too, in our little school district, again, 650 kids, but they're all in the same building. So when those big kids walk through the halls and the little kids see them, I say, they're watching you, and they know you, and they think about who you might be and what you might be doing. And remember that if you make a decision to hurt yourself, every one of those little kids is going to hear about it and wonder. So you have a real important responsibility here too. So let's get you through this.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great. Yeah, it is. It's so important. It's so, and it's just tragic that one bad thing and the child spirals out of control, and then we lose them forever. And that's the part that I don't think that teenagers always get, is how it's permanent. It's forever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So one of the other things we could talk about is effective programming in schools across the lifespan or across the span of schooling. It's a good idea to try to reach kids in middle school, because that begins the period of the highest risk. Typically, we're not seeing kids below grade 6 making suicide attempts. But in that middle school, upper middle school, and then certainly into high school. So an ideal program would reach kids sometime in middle school, sometime in the middle of high school, probably 10th grade. And then again, just a quick refresher right before they leave school, so that they're reminded that there are community resources out there. Our health education teachers, pupil services folks, psychologists, counselors, nurses, they're all critical pieces of the puzzle. Social workers, school social workers as well. Any of those folks can be on the front lines with kids, teaching them. And it's really, again, it's not a complex lesson. It's like, here's what to look out for. Kids, when they're talking about suicide, exposure to suicide through the media or through the community, self-harm can be cutting, is certainly a risk factor. Low mood, depression, access to firearms, any of those things. And what we teach kids then is to identify how to get help. There's an excellent program called Signs of Suicide, and they teach a skill, and that those are the materials we use in New Lisbon. And the skill is acknowledge, care, and tell. So you acknowledge the signs and symptoms, and we teach kids to say, oh, that sounds really hard. I'm sorry to hear you, you know, talking about that. For teachers, it can be important because we teach them to avoid the sort of tough love. Oh, you would have gotten a better grade had you studied it all. So for the kid who's in crisis, bad grade, they're thinking about harming themselves, and that's not the time for tough love. It's the time to express care and concern, which is the second step. Express care and concern. I'd hate for anything bad to happen to you. And you're sort of hinting around like, oh, you know, it sounds kind of iffy and I don't want anything to happen to you. How can I help? And let's tell a trusted adult. So that's the T, acknowledge, care, and tell. The tell is, who do we know in the community? Whether it's a clergy member, it could be any of the folks at school, anybody, a trusted parent who, you know, we all knew, you know, Eric's mom was there for us and Bill's mom was there for us and all these kids, you know, like they all have these connections, like you're saying, they have connections with each other and with parents as well. So you acknowledge the signs and symptoms, show care and concern, tell a trusted adult, and then just get that connection made. So we do that in eighth grade, ideally again in 10th, and then right before graduation. And it's like it's just protective. It's like, you know, it's just, it moves them
take
through
your
life.
Vitamins.
Yeah, right. And it's
brush your
protective
teeth
for the rest of their lives. Floss.
Yeah. I'll tell you, as an SLP, I was not a good flosser, but I started working in skilled nursing for part of my career. I floss now. I don't want to lose my teeth. I do not want to lose my teeth. Yeah.
Once you start, so you never stop.
Yeah. I'm gonna lose those teeth. No, these are all mine. It was funny. I didn't grow up wealthy. My dad, God bless him, he had insurance for orthodontics, but it only paid 50%, and he could not afford for me. And this was I was in 10th grade. I ended up having braces my first year of college, but I paid for it myself. Okay. I saved up the money and I wanted straight teeth. People judge you by your smile or your lack of one, and teeth are a big part of what they see in your face. And so it was something that was important to me in 10th, 11th. Well, it was 10th grade. I got them when I was in 11th grade, and it's so funny. That was, you know, I was what, 16. So that was 42 years ago. I'm 58. 42 years ago, it was $900 for me to pay. And then my dad's insurance paid the other 900, and we brought 9 $100 bills. And the lady at the desk said, "You brought cash." And I was like, "Well, yeah, I don't have a checking account."
Yeah,
but, you know,
good.
It's like
that's,
I have a good, yeah. And I have a good smile because of it, right? So, but yeah, so floss. So floss and do your suicide prevention for sure.
Exactly. So, yeah. Make sure you talk to kids about how to get help, what to look out for. It's not a high risk kind of a scenario. And there's very little, very few mistakes you can make if you reach out. In fact, it's interesting. Here in Wisconsin, we have a law that indemnifies school staff and volunteers from act or failure to act with regard to suicide prevention. It's like a Good Samaritan law, specific for schools around suicide prevention. So the legislature really wants people to act in the interest of kids. So it's good stuff.
Awesome. So, John, tell, I'm sure there's people that are going to want to pick your brain once they hear this. And then let's give a plug to New Lisbon School District. So where do people go to find you and to find New Lisbon?
Yeah, they can search for the New Lisbon School District here in Wisconsin. We're online. My phone number and email address are on the website. Happy to chat with people. And there are some excellent national resources. The University of South Florida, Louis de la Parte Suicide Prevention Center, I think is what it's called. And I'll be happy to send you that link.
Sure, we'll put it in the description for sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, you know, there are guides for these things. Again, Signs of Suicide, Acknowledge, Care, Tell is an excellent resource for use in schools. Certainly, faith communities can access these things as well. Any sort of clergy or lay people would be, it would be wholly appropriate for them to use this with church groups and young people all, you know, all across our communities can benefit.
Yeah, because suicide does not have a demographic when it comes to socioeconomics or whether you believe in God or you do not, or you have faith or you don't have faith, or you it doesn't. It does not care the color of your skin, your any of that. It's creed, nationality, doesn't, you know. And that I'm a Christian, and I believe if the devil can talk a kid into committing suicide, he's going to do it. So, you know, it's just, it's ugly. It's just ugly. And I'm so grateful that you came on the show and talked about this, because it's such an important topic. It really is. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Glad to share.
Awesome.
Yeah. And you're welcome. You know, thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Cause as the podcast title says, we are brighter together. So thanks, John.